This is Thursday, March 3rd, 2016. We are in Natick, Massachusetts, and this tape is part of the Morse Institute Library's continuing Veterans Oral History Project. My name is Maureen Sullivan. Our cameraman is Dan McDermott of Natick Pegasus. We are privileged to have with us today George Peroni. Welcome, George.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Thank you. And this is a special interview. Mr. Peroni has conducted extensive research into his family's involvement with the Italian resistance during the Second World War. So we're going to start off with, may I ask when you were born?
I was born on June 11, 1940.
And what special significance is that?
That's very peculiar. It was the day Mussolini declared war against France and Great Britain. And at that particular time, my father was working in a defense factory. He had been an American naturalized citizen, but my mother was going through the process of being a citizen. As I previously said, my brother Frank was named after Francesco, my father's father, my brother Nick was named after my mother's. And the first question on the naturalization papers questionnaire was, who's the father of our country? And that was the exact question, who's the father of George Washington? And so they decided to name me after the father of our country, which was then very proud, because they're so proud to be Americans.
And where were you born?
Worcester, Massachusetts.
And what part of Worcester?
It's the northeast side. As I said, we family went to Bloomingdale. It was called Grammar School then, and Grafton Street Junior High. And I was lucky enough to go to North High, which is a, then it was a college preparing high school.
And where do you currently live?
I live in Natick, Massachusetts.
Your marital status?
I'm widowed.
Do you have children?
Yes, I do. Alexander Peroni, who is a senior at Bates College, majoring in U.S. history. In fact, he's going to France next year, to the actual Omaha Beach, and take some sand and bring it back home if he can.
Oh, good for him.
He just loves World War II history. And I may add that I have some papers here that I will explain later, which has motivated him to become very much involved in because of what my family went through. I didn't go through much as what their history is. Mm-hmm. And he is now, for his senior thesis at Bates College, is doing extensive research on the internment of Italians in World War II. Many of us know the Japanese were and the Germans, and he's doing extensive, he's speaking with us. He spoke to somebody from Washington, D.C. in the archives just last week, and he's very much involved in U.S. history.
And the Italian internment was in this country.
Yes, in fact, one of the biggest ones was in Montana. But he is going to be looking at an internment camp up in Maine. And thanks to Carrie Holmes, mm-hmm. who's helped my son through his high school and now college years in helping him do research.
Okay, let's get back to you, and especially to your parents and to the relatives. Your first generation Italian American. Where did your parents come from?
Okay, the name of the city or town was called Matera, mm-hmm. M-A-T-E-R-A. It is the oldest living city in the world. Goes back to the Paleolithic period, which is mm-hmm. quasi 40,000 years ago.
And what part of Italy is Matera?
It's in the province of Basilicata, but back pre-World War II was called Lucania. But it's Basilicata, and Matera had actually two sections of it. The commercial area, a residential area, which is small, and then there was another section called Isassi, the stones. That's where my father was born. He was born in an actual cave on straw. He kept warm at nights because he slept with animals. He had a scar on his forehead because he got kicked by a goat or whatever was living in to keep him warm. That's tough times.
Definitely. And your mother lived in another part.
She did. She was a middle class. Her mother had a grocery store and a jewelry store.
Okay. Show the ashtray.
This is, look at the telephone number, 1006, Matera, and it says, Artificiera, Goldsmiths. The reason why I brought this is because, as I talk about this, this was an important part of what had happened during the resistance, that particular jewelry store.
Now, your parents, of course, came. When did your parents come over to this country?
1928.
So that is.
Sorry.
That's okay. So that is after Mussolini came to power. Was it? Why did your parents come over to this country?
Several reasons. Get away from fascist Italy. Mm-hmm. Go to America to become educated citizens of the United States, opportunities, all of the above, as many of the immigrants have come here.
And who were the relatives who stayed behind in Matera?
Well, this is funny because my mother really, if you were to think in economic terms, she came from a middle-class family. Her brothers and sisters went to college. One of her brothers became a Dominican priest, which you can talk about that. But she didn't want to go to college. She wanted to go to America. They went to New York, Ellis Island, and lived in the Bronx. And one of the reasons why they left the Bronx is one of the reasons why my son wrote this paper. It's about the Fascist League in North America.
Wow.
And there's a paper for anybody to read. It's documented here. Carrie Holmes has it on the lock and key. The Fascist League in North America, when my father and mother get here, they're in the Bronx. Tough times, 1928, and then the next year we have a depression, 1929. My brother Frankie was born there. At that particular time, my father, on one day, on one occasion, would have someone come up for them and say, Siamo fascista, we're the fascists, and we want you to contribute money to the effects of Mussolini in Italy. And on another occasion, Siamo mafioso, we're from the mafia. We want you to give money to us because you may have an accident with your knees. And my father's saying, Siamo in America, we're in America. I left Italy to come to this. As you can probably see, the Bronx was not the place. So he found an opportunity, and he was a violinist, by the way. He brought his violin in a cloth bag with straw in it. And that's why I became a musician, because he influenced me through music, and that's another issue. So they moved to Worcester, Mass.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully no more.
No. We didn't have a fascist league. They were in the larger cities. Boston didn't have as much as the New York area did either, so.
But you're pretty much safe in Worcester. Did your parents keep in touch with their relatives?
Yes. To answer the original question. So my mother was from a middle class, so none of her relatives came here. And you can see my father and one sister, one brother, they were born in Nelsassi, in these caves. And you'll see the pictures of these caves. They still exist today. What's peculiar now, as I have been going back to Italy for the past several summers with my son, and finding out what has happened to my relatives it's particular that my father, who was born in a cave, Nelsassi in the Sassi, the quote is, the scourge of Italy is now the jewel of Italy, because these caves are beautiful hotels dug into the mountain of marble and in limestone. They're phenomenal, not all of them. And in 1955, the Italian government closed the Sassi because it was just intolerable. Filth, decay, pestilence, disease. Now the city, Sassi, is open, but under complete command of what the government maintains for cleanliness. So my mother was the only one from her family, because they had no need to come here. They were of financial cap. My father, if I lived in a cave, I would leave too.
All right, so you were born the day Mussolini declared war on Britain and France. Personally, do you have any memories of growing up during that period?
Very little. Mm-hmm. My brothers and sisters, so much older than I. I was just talking to my brother Nicky about Frank has died in the meantime.
Oh.
He saved all the clippings and photographs of World War II, and it was an embarrassing situation for my family. Not as much as for me, because I grew up in the 50s, say, but they were there in the throngs of World War II, and here we are, the Americans are fighting the Italians, and as my son in his research, we found out the Italian-Americans was the largest ethnicity of soldiers and sailors in World War II who fought against the Japanese and the Germans. They were fighting and dropping bombs on their cousins in Italy. As I did my research in Italy, the people I spoke with, did not want any part of Mussolini.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want any part of Germany and what they were doing. They were delighted that Mussolini did create compulsory education, get the trains and buses to run on time, and education and medical attention. Mussolini's biggest problem was unification, because Garibaldi unified it in the 1880s. And then what Mussolini tried to do is unify the Southerners with the Northerners. And in many countries, the South and the Norths never get along. And he called the Southerners Mezzogiorno, which means, it's a pejorative term. Mezzogiorno means afternoons. They go to sleep in the afternoon. They're not productive. So, So I remember did growing up, at the more of my brothers and sisters, of the pejorative names that were given to us because we were Italians. I'm not going to give all the names that we were given, but you probably know some of them. And it was I felt affected by that. The greatest thing that I could have done was to become educated. And I was lucky. I graduated from Harvard and UMass, got my doctorate degree in music education, and worked throughout that particular area. Mm-hmm. And so it did. In fact, recently I was inducted to the Italian American Hall of Fame.
Congratulations.
Some of the things that I did in Russia as an Italian American, not to do with that. So that's another story for another time.
Okay. Did you remember your parents talking about what was happening in Italy?
No, as I said, that was pretty much after the war.
Right.
And they were not happy that the Italians were in the war. As I said, they're Americans. In fact, the flag we had in the front window was the American flag. But we had fresh pasta and macaroni and cannolis every night. But it was maintaining. And so, siamo americani, we're Americans. Si voglio parlare italiano nella casa, you want to speak Italian? That's good. But da fuori, parli inglese, speak English. And so I maintained that. And I'm glad they encouraged me to do that.
Mm-hmm. So as you were growing up, were you becoming more aware of what your relatives had done in Italy?
Yes. As I'm growing up, I'm finding bits and pieces. See, it was my mother's relatives who stayed there. They were the ones who were in resistance and education and were there. My father, their father's relatives all stayed here. And that's when I found out that when my mother went to Italy, that was in 1952, she had an audience with Pope Pius XII. And I later on I find out that was because her brother, the Dominican priest, went to school with Pope Pius XII. And she, after 25 years having lived in America, would go back and forth to Italy every other year on a big Italian cruiser luxury liner. Cristoforo Colombo, Michelangelo, Da Vinci, all of these beautiful boats. I would go on them and see them in the New York Harbor. But she went back and forth. Mm-hmm. They still had the money. And I found out, I may say it now, that my mother's brother, who was a Dominican, was involved with the form of resistance mm-hmm. in helping the Jews coming out of Austria and into Italy. And I do remember, Anamazzate che mataglia triccia, they killed him with a machine gun. And this is a tough one because I remember my mother crying. Or she would tell me about this, that the SS captured my uncle and executed him, decapitated him, and cut his scalp off and gave it to my grandmother. And so I talked to some people in Italy, priests, not cardinals, bishops. And I just found out recently, I said, you know about Padre Rosario? Well, because if you're executed or killed in saying mass on top of that, you're automatically set up for beatification. I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. And what was your uncle's name?
Padre Rosario, my mother's brother.
And when was he executed by the Germans?
I have the specific date. Mm-hmm. He's buried right outside of Florence now. Mm-hmm. It's next to the photo where I have it. It's not 43. I think it's closer towards the end of the war. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I don't
have that. Okay. Suffice to say for the moment that it was during the war.
Oh, yes. Yes. It was a difficult. Oh, it must be in mm-hmm. here. So you can still ask me a question, Molly.
Oh, certainly. So you're getting to know that your relatives, especially your mom's side of the family.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here it is right here. August 18, 1944.
Okay.
In fact, this whole thing, you'll probably take a picture of it after.
Yeah, if you could just kind of hold that up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here we go.
Here we go. And he is actually beatified? Or is he in the process?
I guess that's what they say. If you're assassinated, executed during a mass, mm-hmm. that's one of the points for beatification. But there's other things that go on. There's
right.
letters you got to commit. You got to do miracles and all. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I don't know the actual process of it. But that is the main mm-hmm. reason. I'm not mean, one of the more important reasons mm-hmm. for beatification.
All right, let's get back to the relatives. You're becoming aware that they weren't very fond of Mussolini. They were even less fond of the Germans. And you were mentioning before the interview that the Germans were actually in Matera.
Well, let me go back one.
Go right ahead.
Let me go back about this story that my son wrote.
Mm-hmm. And this gentleman?
This is my son.
That is your son.
He's over 6'9". And through Carrie, uh-huh. we had a demonstration here, not a few years ago, mm-hmm. about World War II veterans and heroes from this area.
Yep.
Frank Palilla, Framingham, Mass.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, let's go talk to Frankie. Frank is from New York City. He lives in Framingham because he worked for ITT.
Mm-hmm.
Frank was a medic in World War II. Are you familiar with the story?
Yes, I am. I believe he's part of the Oral History Project, too.
Oh, well, I get to call Frankie.
Yeah.
And he says, yeah, I'd be glad to talk with you. Well, Frank was involved in one of the biggest projects, Eisenhower. It's called the Luciano Project.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there were two simultaneous projects that were held in World War II. Operation Husky.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Operation Husky?
Can't say that I am.
Before the United States got into war, the Nazis were sabotaging ships in the New York Harbor. Mm-hmm. The Navy could not get a hold of them, capture them, and they were just slipping and sliding all over the place. It was fortunate that Tom Dewey, who was the Attorney General for New York, Eisenhower, figured out who controls the harbor. The mob, the mafia. Who was in charge of the mob for New York? Lucky Luciano. Lucky's in prison. Gets a meet with Roosevelt, whomever. Navy intelligence. Lucky, you gotta take it, you gotta help us get rid of the Nazis. Lucky, I guess he made a deal with, I don't know, it's if one is fortunate enough, my son has done some research on this and wrote about the Operation Husky. Got rid of the, Luciano Project. Got rid of the saboteurs. They were coming up out of submarines on Long Island, Germans.
Mm-hmm.
Part two is that Lucky Luciano, this is going obliquely to answer your question,
mm-hmm.
is from southern Italy. Frankie Palilla is from southern Italy, his parents are, speaks Italian.
Yeah.
As a medic, Frankie Palilla worked with Lucky Luciano in the invasion of southern Italy to have Lucky Luciano and Frankie Palilla go ahead into the villages before the Navy operations to find out, reconnaissance, to go into each of the villages and find out what the installations are, what the Germans were, and how many guns were held there. And with this interview, and I was amazed that Frankie gave us all this information, that he worked with Lucky Luciano. Now, why did Lucky Luciano get all this information? Because the southern Italians had more respect for the mafia than they did for Mussolini. Well, the reason was, Mussolini ousted the mobs out of Italy. They came to America, Chicago. So, when Lucky Luciano, Cristo la Padrone, this is the godfather. So, Frankie Palilla and Lucky Luciano, putting my son, Lucky Luciano would report back to Naval Intelligence. Yeah, there's 14 guns over there, there's 20 installations there. And that was part of the deal that Lucky was given, perhaps when he came back to America, or he probably left Sing Sing, I think it was called, had his own operations out of Italy after the war. But that was phenomenal. So did he go? He probably, I don't know, my cousins don't know. He probably did go to Matera, but that was all part of that program going in there.
It's amazing because when you think invasion of Italy, you're thinking, okay, Anzio, Sicily, but
they started,
not this part.
No, they started right at the bottom. It's just they crossed right up. And Eisenhower, or was Patton. Patton and Montgomery hated each other. And they were trying to figure out who's going to get into the mainland first after leaving Siracusa and getting into Italy. And I have some information about who landed in Matera first.
Who did?
Well, I'll tell you when I get to the story.
Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And it's a brief story about what happened. So, so that's my to answer the questions. It's fortunate or unfortunate that they had more respect for the mafia than they did for Mussolini. And the devil you do and the devil you know, the devil you know and the devil you don't know. And but don't if you, as we all know our history. The partisans hated Mussolini. We didn't want any part of Nazism. We didn't want fascism. And in 1943, they got Mussolini and La Signora Patriaccia just a few hundred yards away from Switzerland, captured them, brought them back to Milan, machine gunned, and hung them upside down in the Piazza di Milan, right in the central of Milan.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see... They did that to the Mussolini. That's what they thought of him. So, but is it that way today? No, it's not that way at all.
Yeah, I remember some years ago, his granddaughter was a member of the Italian Parliament.
I think Mussolini's son married Sophia Loren's sister, and he was a pianist, a jazz pianist.
Hmm.
As being a musician, I think I have remember reading something like that.
Well, let's get back to Matera.
Okay.
And, Mussolini, by around 1943, Mussolini's on his way out, but the Germans are coming back in.
Yes.
Yes.
But now, as Operation Husky has happened, Lucha, Operation Husky, I think is the name of the project where the invasion of Sicily and southern Italy is happening at this particular time, so that the Italians, now I can get to my notes of what Matteo is about.
Okay.
Italians surrendered in, I think it was September 8th. Let me get my glasses on. I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
It was just a few, September 8th, 1943.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's not on the first page. Thank you very much for giving all of these questions. This is quite extemporaneous, so it's something that I remembered from when I was growing up, too. I did interview people in Matera, Franceschino Maniconi. These are my mother's cousins, so perhaps they're my second cousins. And in the street that some of the activity was held was where Tomas is right. I'm not going to show you on camera, but it's right there where it was happening, where Franceschino Maniconi. See, my mother's last name was Maniconi. Very common name in Matera. But it was on the street called Stigliani. Sorry. Stigliani, where it is Sasso Barisano, where the oldest part of Italy is. And some Nazis were executed, machine gunned by the Italian partisans. Matera. Now, the name for people from Matera were called I Matarani, Materese. And so I interviewed Tommaso Maniconi and my aunt, I'll call him Anna Maniconi, and Aldo Montemuro, who owns a little inn. These inns are now, when I say inn, they're inn because they're dug into the mountain. Mm-hmm. And Donato Rizzi, who is a historian and an artist, and some of his works are in Rome and Padua and Berlin and London, very articulate, very knowledgeable. And he was the one that was pointing to me where the Nazis were held up in the typical steeple of the church and shooting at the Imatarani count, not too far from where I was staying, a few feet, in fact. So in September 8, 1943, forgive me while I
go right
use
ahead.
My notes, General Pietro Bodaglio, he surrendered to Eisenhower, allowing the Allied troops to land in southern Italy. Now, the southern Italy, I'm talking Calabria, Basilicata, Lucania, and Puglia. These are the southern provinces. Right after General Bodaglio surrendered, he went to Basilicata, Matera, and formed an anti-fascist government. I don't think that was difficult because they were not too crazy about what was going on. Now, while this was happening, the Nazis, no, they're being pushed up from the Allied troops. So as they're coming up north, what are they doing? They're destroying bridges, highways, hydroelectric plants. Now, as part of what they're doing is going into shops, stores, looting, pillaging, raping, going to this shop, my mother's, I don't know if it's a cousin, gold jewelry store, and taking whatever they can. At the time, the Nazis, they captured four Italian soldiers who just fled because they realized the Italians' army surrendered. So now, the Italians become the enemy to the Germans. So these Nazis, I use the word Nazis, German, I'm using them interwoven. Mm-hmm. Okay? The German soldiers captured these Italian and civilians, and they incarcerated them or put them on the trucks or whatever, because now they're soldiers of the enemy, they're enemies now. Now, the people from Matera knew the Nazis were coming, so they're trying to do as much as possible to protect themselves, getting guns, swords, pitchforks, knives, whatever they can. So, Emmanuel Maniconi, this is my mother's cousin, who owns this jewelry store, they go in there and take whatever they can. So Emmanuel Maniconi had an opportunity to kill a Nazi who moments later, as soon as that, it was like the shot heard around the world. As soon as he started, when these soldiers, Nazi soldiers coming in, he was firing at them. Then all of a sudden, the whole city, not whole city, well, whoever started erupting and going after these German soldiers. And there were skirmishes. And then, and I'll show you the photos where the Nazis had pretty much gone, and they figured they could take the city over. They had a difficult time. And so, as I said, there were explosives. The Matarese prepared themselves. There were 15, if I remember, 15 Matarese killed. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty much a skirmish for that one day. That day now is called September 20th, 1943. And I will show you later on in maps, there are many streets, not too far from where I go when I stay in Italy, mm-hmm. that is called Via 20 Settembre. It's the same street that where my cousin owns the jewelry store. But that's where the skirmishes were held. That was held in una piazza Vittorio Veneto and Via Stigliani, right there in that street, very small. Nazis were overwhelmed. Now, as the Matarese are shooting at them, they hear the footsteps. Now, this is the answer to your previous question. It wasn't the Americans.
Uh-oh.
That were coming up. No, they were Allied troops. Mm-hmm. It was the Black Cat British Battalion and the 4th Canadian Renaissance. Reconnaissance. I'm going to get this Renaissance up. So it was Canadians and the Black Cat Division that came into Matera. Because of all this, no, they're fleeing north. They're running. They're not Germans are running out north. Matera was the first city to form a formal uprising against the Nazis. And on September 20, 1966, the Italian Minister of Defense, Roberto Tremoli, awarded the Silver Medal to the people, Silver Medal of Valor, to the people of Matera. And my cousins were involved in that. Emanuela, my mother's cousin, my cousin, involved. Now, the city has been opened up. Throughout Europe, and maybe throughout all of America, there's an annual election for assigning one city a year to be the cultural city of the world. The year 2019, Matera is the cultural capital of the world. But it has gone through, since its Paleolithic period, it's nice to walk down some of those streets. There are fig trees growing and very easy for my son to pluck down some figs and eat as we're walking. And walnut trees and castagna, chestnut trees, mm-hmm. and lemons. And what I'm hoping, as now I said, my cousin owns one of those hotels dug right into the mountain. I just hope it doesn't become a commercialized city. I doubt it. Mm-hmm. Maybe the non-historic part. Mm-hmm. The city is a classic city. 12 years ago, Mel Gibson filmed The Passion of Christ. Is Passione di Cristo. They filmed The Passion of Christ. And when I was there last summer, they were doing some takes for the second of Ben-Hur.
Wow.
You take a look at that city. It's just...
And I understand some of your relatives were extras.
They were extras. Oh, yes. And that reminds me, as I said to you, mm-hmm. you were all gathered around for a cappuccino break. Mm-hmm. It gets dark. Lightning struck the cross that they were using on the set. And my cousin, I know I remember getting back to me, phone calls. We were only making a movie. This is only a movie this time. Mm-hmm. So,
when you were talking to your relatives about when the uprising took place, did he say where they got their weapons from?
Oh, they all had them. They hid them on the vats of wines and things like that. And, mm-hmm. Oh, they always knew. They knew that the Germans were never going to take over Italy, you know. And so they did have, they probably confiscated them when the Nazis originally came through originally, and but they held up a resistance. They said this was the first city to defeat the Nazis on its own without Allied troops.
Amazing. Did they have any other stories about what it was like during the war?
It was a clandestine environment. Mm-hmm. Cloak and dagger, just couldn't speak, because they didn't want to be occupied by the Tedeschi. It's the Germans. And hiding. When Frankie Palilla and Lucky Luciano went into Martedo, small city, they were dressed as civilians, like laborers. And I remember Frankie saying, he was there, and these guys have got boots all the way up to the neck. They're walking into there, and they were just scared. Those guys were ruthless. They didn't want any part of it. It's tired. They were not this militant environment.
And did your relatives, did they deal with rationing, food shortages?
Oh, by all means, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's tough. Yeah. And the Germans, as they said, thank you for asking this question, they would take as much as they can. Olive oil, first thing, olive oil is gone. All the food. Matilda is known as the best bakery, bread maker in all of southern Italy, probably all of Italy. Bread is phenomenal. In fact, one of the bread companies is called Peroni.
So you have the photos. Let's get a little visual aids in here.
Shall I? These are recent pictures, last summer,
right,
or August. So, shall I explain what this is?
Yes, you were mentioning where the Nazis were.
No, where I'm taking this picture of it is from my hotel room. The name of the hotel is L'Hotel in Pietra, the hotel in the stone, in the mountain. And I'm taking the picture. You can see there are some people living in here and things like that. And Donato Rizzi, who is one of the historians, this is his place right here.
Okay.
And there were some Italian partisans right in front, below this wall. By the way, this is a descending.
Yeah.
Descending all the way down to the bottom, and then it comes up. It takes about maybe 10 minutes to get down here, maybe about 15, 20 minutes to get up. But the Germans were up there. The typical snipers shooting at whatever they can see, whatever partisans they can see in Matera. This room where I'm standing, where I'm taking the picture, is the hotel that I'm in, what my cousin owns, okay? Can I move on?
Go right ahead.
And then here's my son standing. As you can probably see, the roads are going down to the center. And his walking throughout this is quite noticeable.
Yeah, at 6'9", you would be.
And then again, this is one of the places where these soldiers were holding up and trying to shoot us whatever they can. I'm surprised, didn't they realize that they knew that the British and Americans are coming up, but they tried to, and this is what, tried to steal and loot as much as they can. That's nasty.
Very.
And this is my aunt. She was one of the storytellers. She was a former school teacher. And again, my mother's relatives, they were educated. They went on to schools, and school colleges. Whereas my father didn't, none of his did.
Did she have any particular stories about?
No, she was probably 8 years old at this time, 9 years old. He is my mother's cousin. This is his house, which is right here in this street. Via Stigliani was one of the skirmishers.
Wow.
So did he remember? No, he's probably hiding, he said, underneath.
And can't blame him.
Can't blame him. And I talked to his older sister, and she did it, but she was so frail, she didn't give me any stories. He gave me some stories. Nino, that is his name. Now, Donato Rizzi, he is a well-educated author, historian, artist. He gave me some of the stories where, in fact, this is where we're sitting right now where the Nazis were shooting at, this particular wall, right in here. And he owns that house, that apartment. And you can probably see, this guy's almost 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
And this is where he's explaining to us some of the historical facts, and we were sitting there. I would, in 1943, I wouldn't want to be sitting there. Aldo Montemuro, another historian, he owns this place down at the bottom of the bottom street where he saw some of the activity, but he was only a kid to himself, mm-hmm. and that's his wife. He owns a restaurant and bed and breakfast place, too. So we try to get as much history as possible. This is my mother's brother, yeah. The Dominican priest. I don't know the effects of what's happening today and how he will be doing, but I've shown this to the priest here. In fact, Father Mike at St. Patrick did the translation here for me.
Oh, wow.
And what it says here, and he was impressed. So Father Mike is the one that gave me the English translation. This is my son at the church. In case it is San Pietro San Paolo, and you can in Matera. Again, the church. And these are just some of the extra photos of Matera. As I said, it is now becoming the jewel of Italy. It's just clean,
beautiful,
polite, sane. Not too many tourists, no American tourists, maybe from Germany, Sweden, coming back. But the place is just, I guess, semi-tropical, cactus, olive trees, palm trees, lemon trees, but not full tropical. They'll have a winter with maybe every other year a quarter of an inch of snow on the rooftops. But that's it, you know.
So George, talking more about your relatives.
Oh, sorry, I digress.
That's okay, that's all right. Were they members of the Communist Party or were they?
No, but my father, I remember my father reading a journal, weekly, Il Progresso. It was anti-fascist, anti-Mussolini. That's all I can remember.
Yeah.
That was an American newspaper printed in New York. My son knows more about that. But he was not a communist or a socialist. He definitely believed in coming to America and working. One job, two jobs, whatever it took.
Right.
And never, that was it. Never take a handout from anybody. The government, and it was to have been on, they called it welfare. Would have been the utmost insult. My brothers and sisters did work. I was the fortunate one. I was post-World War II. When they worked, my brother Frankie and Nikki worked as caddies at a country club, and Gina and Lena worked as babysitters. When they came home, they put the money on the table that was divided among the family members. I didn't have to do that. But that was it. If I did become a caddy at a country club, and I kept my money. But then again, I was the only one that went to college,
right.
too.
So you're mentioning your siblings who were older than you. Were any of them in the military?
Frank was in the Air Force during the Korean War.
He
died a few years ago, and I suspect, this is my suspicion, he died of a blood disease. That was questionable because he lived in some of the areas where they were doing atomic bomb experimentation. Nikki was, at the end of the Korean War, was in the Navy. The closest I got, I was a musician performing for the USO tours.
Oh, that's fun.
I was never a member of the military. That's one of my grief points, is that I wish I were in the military somehow. But I did play for the USO tours. In fact, my interest in the military has been so passionate that I was invited by the Brigadier General to spend a month down in Paris Island, going through boot camp, and I did, about 10 years ago.
Wow.
I showed that to Paul
Carew?
Carew, and he says, I hope to make you an honorary member of the Marine Corps. Maureen, if you got any poll, let me know, because I would love to be an honorary member, because I did work. One of the reasons why I went there is because I sent students there to be part of the U.S. Marine Band. But that was the closest I got playing. And I played, my U.S. tours were for Strategic Air Command bases, SAC bases, up in Goose Bay, Labrador, and Thule, Greenland.
Whoa.
God doesn't even go there. So my brothers were in the military.
Uh-huh.
And my father could have been one of the people interned. Joe DiMaggio's father was interned. Couldn't see his son play baseball. When my son writes out this essay, it's not an essay, it's a term paper, 50 pages, and thank God Carrie's helping him.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out what Italians were interned. I remember reading a section that my son showed me that Joe DiMaggio's father couldn't see his son play because he was in prison.
Well,
in prison, but it was.
Uh-huh. Remember, Dominic played for the Red Sox.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
But then again, after the war, Joe, I guess, but Joe was playing all the time. But the father, mm-hmm. I don't think it was for a long time as much as the Japanese or the Germans.
Mm-hmm. So the reason I was asking that question earlier about the communists and socialists was there've been documentaries about the Italian partisans being members of the communist and socialist parties.
Right, and that the group that captured Mussolini.
Mm-hmm.
Not the group. Now, after that, well, before that, Hitler gave Mussolini this job as a temporary lead of a new fascist government. I forgot mm-hmm. the specific name of it. It was nothing. It was a puppet government of Hitler. So, but it was specifically the communist partisans that got mm-hmm. my parents. No part of it all. The only thing that I remember my father telling me, reading Il Progresso, which was totally anti-fascist, mm-hmm. against Mussolini, it could have been on overtones of a communist newspaper.
Right. And your dad worked in a defense plant.
He worked making taps and dies for machineries, for tools that made equipment to make military mm-hmm. equipment. Worcester, Mass. Had one of the biggest Carrington Richardson arms. Mm-hmm. Made military M1 Garands were made there. And then right down the road in Mass Pike, Springfield, one of the biggest armories in the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so George, are there any other stories you may recall from your relatives or from your own family?
Both, my family and my relatives in Italy don't want to experience that again. I don't want to have had gone through that. They never wanted any part of I fascisti, the fascists, or I tedeschi, the Germans. And they were willing to fight. I remember my mother telling me that when the Americans were dropping bombs, it's so unfortunate. We got Italians who went to America. Now they're dropping bombs on us. But they knew it was against them. They knew it was to get rid of the Nazis, the fascists, the Nazis.
Hmm. And when the British and Canadians did enter Matera, do you remember your relatives saying, it's like, hey, welcome, liberators?
Oh, by all means, yeah. Celebrations and everything, hugs and kisses, break open the bottle of wines that they hid from the Germans. Everything was so clandestine. They hid everything.
Uh-huh. Hopefully not so clandestine once the city was liberated, or were
right,
they?
Right. Oh, no, it was quite open. They all knew that and all that. But I was completely amazed to see that jewelry store was the beginning. The shot heard round was the beginning when Emmanuel Monicone was involved in the first shot that created the skirmishes right down the street from where we're living and where mm-hmm. Nino lives.
And do your relatives remember the end of the war itself?
I didn't talk about that, but it had to be a most joyous occasion, mm-hmm. obviously. And if you know anything about cinema, but then after post-World War II, we start beginning Verismo in Italian cinema with Visconti and I was about to say 8.5.
Fellini?
Federico Fellini. This was post-war Italy was a great source of talking about showing the reality, Verismo, the truth of what was happening in Italy post-World mm-hmm. War. And I think I've seen so many. And one of my greatest movies was by Lena Wertmüller. It was called Stette Bellezza, about how Italians were imprisoned by the Germans. The Italians, mm-hmm. the Germans imprisoned Italians. And I say, well, aren't we on your side? It didn't matter.
Now, I remember seeing two women with Sophia Loren.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the Italians were just totally, as they said, and I learned, totally mistreated. Hitler basically said to Mussolini, you're on my side, otherwise I'll take you over anyway. I'm taking it over. So, the cultures of the Italians and the Germans are completely opposite.
So George, is there anything else you'd like to say?
That's it. Maybe perhaps I'll talk to you about my experiences in Russia. I lived there, and having been the first American to conduct a new Russian national anthem through the years when it changed over from the Soviet Union, and I conducted this in the Hermitage in Russia, St. Petersburg.
Oh, that there. Must have been a sight.
Oh, I've lived so many times.
And I know the Hermitage is one of the more beautiful buildings.
The most. I've been to the Jeu de Paume, I've been to the Louvre, I've been to the British Museums, museums of the Vatican. Wow.
Yeah.
Have you been to the Hermitage?
Never have, but I've been to the British Museum.
Yeah, well, this I've been to all of them. And the Hermitage and the Palace of Peter the Great in just outside of center St. Petersburg in Petrovaretz, where I conducted concerts at the Sun Palace. And I lived with people in the military. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that some other time. That was so exciting, because I was involved in Perestroika and Glasnost myself, as the Russian government is trying to grow itself out of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm. And certainly beats a USO concert in Greenland.
Oh, no, that was done. That was during February.
Ooh.
No.
Tad brutal.
No. I want to thank you very much, Maureen.
I want to thank you very much. You had some fascinating stories, and want to thank you for coming by and recording your experiences for the Veterans Oral History Project.
Thank you very much. Okay. And if anybody's interested, these papers written by my son, that Carrie thought was so important, they're documented here about how Lucky Luciano and the Mafia helped defeat the Nazis in World War II.
Fascinating stuff.